Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's February 16th. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Adam Carroll. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, and what a morning it has been for many drivers here trying to get over Parley's, whether it be to Salt Lake or to Park City. It's been a very, very slow go of it with 60-plus minute drive times from Salt Lake to Park City here this morning. We're continuing to see both valley snow on the Wasatch front side, also the snow on the Wasatch back side. Areas that are along the east benches here on the Wasatch front side are going to continue to have moderate to heavy snow, but the mountains are going to continue to get pummeled, especially the Cottonwoods. Another 20 to 30 inches is expected there. Another 10 to 20 for the northern mountains, including the Park City area, between now and tomorrow night, as we continue to have a winter weather advisory in effect. And that does include the mountain valleys for more in the way of snow, another 6 to 12 likely in this area between now and then, as this storm doesn't want to leave the area. So we will linger this around the Wasatch front and the Wasatch back in northern Utah for another 24 to 36 hours before we see high pressure come in. And then we have a little bit of a break in the action when this happens on Thursday. So nothing in terms of snow shower activity on Thursday or just sunny skies at times as well. So we'll actually have a pretty nice day on Thursday. We'll keep the temperatures in the mid-30s out there. Then we have another storm system coming in for Friday into Saturday. This will bring accumulating snow to the area on Friday and again on Saturday. So that's another storm we're going to be following. All of this is wonderful, except not when you're trying to drive in it. And so I would expect a really difficult commute tomorrow. If you thought today was bad, tomorrow is probably going to be double that. So that's something that you have to keep in mind moving forward.
Okay. Yikes. Thank you.
Yep, you bet.
And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. So first off, we have an avalanche warning issued in place. So the avalanche danger ranges from high to extreme across the whole state right now. We've got an extreme danger for the Salt Lake and Park City area mountains. That's in effect from 6 a.m. this morning until 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, and we'll evaluate then. For avalanches, there was one avalanche triggered yesterday afternoon as the wind started picking up in Mineral Fork. And then overnight, there was a large widespread natural cycle in Little Cottonwood Canyon. They hit the road. Currently, they're not open. There was also some known natural avalanches hitting Big Cottonwood Canyon as well. And it's still occurring. So avalanche activity is happening. The three issues we've got for today is that persistent weak layer, new snow, and wind drifted snow. So first off, we added a ton of new snow and water to our really weak facets. Today, I'd expect to see huge 3 to 5 foot deep avalanches. It's going to be most likely on those aspects we've been talking about, so west through north through southeast. But with so much snow and so much wind, I'd expect to see some on upper elevation southerlies and lower elevation northerlies today as well. For the winds, we've just got a ton of wind over the last night, gusts up to 60 miles per hour. All this fresh snow is going to drift into sensitive slabs of wind-drifted snow, any slopes with signs of wind-drifted snow, pillowing, hollow sounds, avoid those slopes. And then anywhere that's not affected by the wind is going to have new snow avalanches. And that could be on all aspects and all elevations, even down to the lower elevations. So today we're going to have an extreme avalanche danger at mid and upper elevations, and then the avalanche danger is going to be high at lower elevations. That just means to avoid being under or near any steep slopes. Even very small avalanches could bury a person today. Heavy snowfall, strong westerly winds, and our weak snowpack have created very dangerous avalanche conditions. And today, natural and human-triggered avalanches are certain, even in unusual places that they don't normally occur. So anybody going near the mountains today should avoid being under any steep slopes. And that includes skiers, snowshoers, runners, sledding, dog walking, basically anybody who goes near the mountains today at all.
I've never seen the map look like this, just a big black center with the extreme markings followed, circled by the high. So pretty amazing. Yeah, thanks, Nikki.
Yep.
Well, and as Nikki mentioned, again, extreme danger at all mid and upper elevations, and even dangerous for those of you out and about in the mountains, just thinking you're going to go off for a a snowshoe or a sled or a run, please stay away from anything that could possibly slide on top of you. Got plenty of new snow at the mountain resorts. They were reporting as of 7 a.m. this morning, 10 new inches at both Deer Valley and Park City. And Lou's going to be busy out there. He says he's going to be focusing on the 3 and the 5K until the snow lets up and he can get back out into the farm. We've got folks out in Round Valley doing the best they can to keep up with all of this new snow. Basin Rec says that their priority is to plow the safe pathways first before the trails, but once they can get those cleared, they said they'll head out over to the Willow Creek Park trails along with Crooked Mile. Again, as we heard, Little Cottonwood Canyon is closed to all traffic, including ski buses for avalanche control. UDOT has not listed, I don't know, it's hard to read, not listed an estimated time for reopening. Another place I saw looked like possibly at 4 p.m. So what that means is that we're going to see a lot of traffic, skier traffic, move from the Cottonwood Canyons over to the Park City area. So again, if you're driving, please give people plenty of room. Little Cottonwood Canyon, they've got plows out, but based on the maps that UDOT is showing at this point, looks like traffic is just backing up with the highway still closed up to Brighton and Solitude. If you have any updated information, you can always text us at 435-640-7468. Again, we've got plows out. We know that traffic is slowed along Interstate I-80 as well as 224, US 40, and 248 to Camas, also reportedly pretty hazardous. We've got that winter weather advisory for the Wasatch Mountain Valleys in the Park City area again through tomorrow afternoon. Also saw a sign that chains and 4x4s are reportedly necessary in Parley's Canyon. Well, the Semi-County Council meets tomorrow, Wednesday, via Zoom, starting at 3:30. On the phone with a preview, I have Semi-County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
First of all, the council will meet as the governing board of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District with a discussion and possible approval of a real estate contract. This is for a parcel noted as PP50. No staff report here. Can you tell us where this is and what this is about?
Well, yeah, sure. It's out by the trailhead just behind the Jeremy Ranch School, kind of in the area of the Water Reclamation District. It's a parcel of land that has been in somewhat of a dispute for a long time about use. It's adjacent to the trailhead that exists now, which the current trailhead is on an easement. And it's always been the desire of the community and of Basin Rec to acquire this parcel so that we could solidify the parking area out there, perhaps make it slightly larger.
So how big of a parcel is it?
I don't know. I don't remember the exact acreage, but it mirrors about the same size as what kind of parking exists out there right now with the bathrooms that are out there.
Okay, so any idea how many parking spots it would open up?
I think it's less than 20 that it would add, but it certainly provides a piece of land that can be secured for parking as opposed to being on an easement.
Yeah, and how much are we buying it for?
I think we're going to have to wait for the contract to come forward, for that to be presented to the council.
Okay. Later on, also a discussion on trail issues. Can you give us a few details about the use and parking issues? And I think especially Rob's Trail and in Summit Park is where we're really focused.
Yeah, I think those have been probably the lightning issues that have come up, or the hottest because of those neighborhood interactions. You know, we have trailheads that are abut private land and people's backyards or front yards, and we have problems with on-street parking in the summers. In places where it may not be the best to have on-street parking. We have gone through with Basin Rec, they have established through the county's attorney's office and the county council the ability to write tickets and have those adjudicated by an administrative law judge if they're challenged within the last year. What we're discovering and what's happening and everybody's discovering is that these trails exist and they're available and they're starting to get used pretty heavily. I think Basin Rec has gone through a process with their board to analyze this problem. You know, it's a little bit different in each area, whether you're in Summit Park or near Rob's Trail or in Round Valley or at some of our other trailheads. And then, of course, we have other trailheads that will come online in the next few years, like Discovery, which will get more formalized. And so, you know, we're trying to put some broader policies in place and procedures that might help us disperse some of the load around to different trailheads, perhaps make it easier to get to the trailheads without using a single occupancy vehicle and having to take up that parking space. And then also just trail etiquette, you know, is it appropriate to pull a barbecue out of your car or vehicle after a ride on the trail or a hike on the trail and be having a barbecue next to somebody's private home? Those are issues that have come up in the last year that we're going to have to discuss.
Yeah, and this is perhaps a better question for Pat Putt, but you know, as we see development approvals come in, people are using trailheads and trails as community benefits, but what's happening is that the folks living in the development only think it's their community benefit and not for the benefit of the greater community. So do we need to kind of relook at whether or not these are community benefits?
I think I would leave that discussion to the Planning Commission first, given that that's their purview to look at that from the standpoint of the general plan and then how a code applies to that. There's a growing debate within the community about, you know, who those trails are for, who pays for them, and what they contribute to our community, not only to the residents of the community or those that are staying here, but those that are visiting as well. And those are ongoing debates in a community that relies on tourism for its for the basis of its economy.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about etiquette. Have we had reports of crowds on the trail not masking or distancing like they've been asked to?
I think we, whenever you get groups of people together, you're going to have those issues. Although, just like we're seeing with, generally speaking, with the ski areas and the heavy use for those ski days, generally speaking, people are respecting our rules within the county. That doesn't mean it's 100%, and I'm never going to claim that, but people are not only self-interested in order to keep themselves safe to put those distance rules in place, but they're hopefully interested in other people too to protect them. And so people are wearing their masks when they're in those close proximities. And making those judgments.
Yeah, and what about conflicts between hikers and bikers?
You know, an ongoing issue. You know, I as you have Charlie Sturgis on the radio, and I see or talk to him about other things. I hear about those conflicts. I think those are issues that are going to have to be taken up by Basin Rec as they work with the broader community about how trails are used.
And what about unleashed dogs?
that does fall into the purview of the county, specifically because of our animal control policies and regulations. You're not supposed to have unleashed dogs on trails unless you're in designated unleashed dog areas like Round Valley. Or a dog park. So that is an illegal act if people are hiking with their dogs without leashes.
Yeah. And I want to just briefly talk about some of the options that you are looking at to involve transit, as you say, not to use single occupancy vehicles. So what's being considered here to accommodate bikes?
Well, I think Basin Rec is considering whether the community wants to try using some of our remote parking lots or other areas where we can more easily park people, and then transporting them to trailheads. We'll see whether that is a method that gets picked up by the policymakers at this time. But it's certainly one of the options out there. We have the ability to do it. Whether we want to spend the money to do that, that's a whole different question.
And this problem isn't mentioned, but are we doing anything to help those who are parking at trailheads, whose cars are getting burglarized?
Well, I mean, the same thing that we always do. I mean, certainly we highly broadcast the fact that those events are happening, so that people can be more aware and make sure that they don't have exposed things that are valuable within their car when they leave their car, that they lock their vehicle when they leave. Those are the two best methods to avoid those problems. And then, of course, the whole reporting of that to the sheriff's office in the case of the unincorporated county when those things occur so that they can be investigated.
All right, at 4 o'clock, a legislative update. Anything new on whether Summit County will be moved from a third to a fourth class county?
I haven't heard anything new this week, which tells me that we're probably fairly solid in staying a third class county. But I haven't heard whether that bill has made it past committee yet either.
Yeah. And again, this is something you have told me earlier that the county is not interested in. So is this something that's kind of being forced on the county?
It's really not about Summit County. It's about manipulating the numbers so other counties stay or become the class of county that they're in, and then it's just the ramification that of that change that could affect Summit County. So we're working with the bill sponsors to make sure that and UAC is to make sure that counties stay where they think they need to stay.
All right. Let's see. A new bill mentions Senate Bill 168. Staff says prompted debate at the Utah Association of Counties. Apparently, Moab seeking the ability to set curfew and hours on ATV use. Does Summit County have a position here?
We have not discussed that. I'm sure. I mean, we have our weekly meeting to discuss bills coming up in about an hour. I'm sure it will come up. We haven't set a position. It doesn't sound like this is one where UAC may take a position, just because there might be differences between how counties want to handle that. So since I've been here, I've not heard of issues around that, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
All right. Let's see. Are you hearing anything about reaction from the legislature to the new Biden administration?
I am not hearing any of that reaction, no.
Okay. And it looks like the council scheduled to vote final approval on the transit memorandum of understanding with Wasatch County. Any changes to the document since we talked last week?
Nothing that wasn't discussed within the last meeting. That's the draft that's in front of the council. I expect the council to adopt that this week, and then Mike and I are going to be off to the races on starting to meet to build some plans.
Okay. And again, when does this kind of come back to the public for input?
In terms
of your plans, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think Mike and I will be discussing that. I mean, certainly our policymakers will be brought along with mm-hmm. this. We're not going to act independently of our councils in order to do that. There will be nothing that's done that won't have public involvement with it. I think we need to have some initial meetings to set out some timelines. And then I imagine in my case, during manager comments, I will be at least updating the council on when they can expect to see stuff.
All right, great. Council also making appointments to its health board as well as the County Fair Advisory Board. We know the health board's been plenty busy. Any idea at this point about whether or not a fair even happens this year?
Well, we are acting as if a fair is going to happen, and we are planning for that. I have already, the fair board is already meeting in order to get their plans together. They're looking at their budget to make sure what they can achieve this year. But we, you know, in conjunction with what we're hearing from the health department, we expect there to be a county fair.
All right, and we're talking full county fair with the rodeo and the exhibits and the rides and all of that, huh? As opposed to just the livestock sale?
That's what we're expecting this year. That's correct.
Okay. Tom, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to mention, because it's on the agenda, I want to really honor Greg Winterton for his service in law enforcement and with Summit County for 24 and a half years. That's remarkable service, and we really appreciate him as he retires.
Okay. Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, last week, Deer Valley Resort issued a statement that it was updating its uphill ski policy, apparently after a couple of close calls between non-resort skiers and the ski patrol trying to do its job. On the phone with details, I have ski patrol manager Chris Urkula. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So why don't you just start by giving us a little bit of background here, the resort deciding to update its mountain safety and uphill policy. How come?
Yeah, we've had a policy over the years of enforcing our boundaries, and just in this last couple of years with the increase in traffic in the mostly the Empire area and the Guardsman's Pass Highway 224 area, the increase in backcountry users there, we've run into a few more issues here the last two winters with backcountry users entering into the ski area, sometimes unknowingly. So we've had to expand and increase our roped boundary back there and our signage. We've had a few interactions with some backcountry users coming in to the ski area while we're doing our avalanche mitigation work in the mornings.
So that's the biggest concern, the fact that they're there while you're setting off bombs?
Yeah, you know, it's, as you can imagine, when you're out doing work with explosives, and you have somebody that you are not planning on and you're not inviting coming into the area that you're working with explosives with, that's very concerning on our end, and it poses some issues for sure.
Oh my goodness, yeah, right. Not only, I mean, the risk of burying somebody, but also just the risk of somebody getting hurt by the explosive.
Yeah, correct. It's like I said, it poses some very challenging issues when we're out doing our avalanche control work. And it's not, you know, there's more than just avalanche control work issues that we deal with out there. It's at the other end of the day when we're doing, you know, what a lot of people call our sweeps at the end of the day. We've had some backcountry users come into the ski area after we do our sweeps when the area is closed, and then we've swept everybody out of that area as well. And that's concerning for us too, because, you know, if that person were to get injured or need assistance and somehow, you know, we've left that area, we've swept that area, we've moved on to other parts of the resort at the end of the day, and there's nobody left to go help those people and assist them if they need.
Yeah, so where are these people coming from? Is it there at Empire where they can be accessed again off of like the Bonanza Flat area? Is that where they're coming from?
That's the majority of the issue that we're seeing is now with increased traffic in the Highway 224 Guardsman's Pass area towards our Empire Canyon area. There's just more and more users out there, snowmobilers, backcountry skiers, snowboarders, snowshoers, hikers. And that's where we're running into the issue is in that area. And we absolutely love to see more people enjoying the mountains, getting out there, all of the work that the city has put in back there, with parking and restrooms, and then also Mountain Trail has been up there, grooming areas as well. It's great to see people using that area and that getting more activation back there. But we just want to remind everybody that entering into the closed roped ski area boundary is considered a trespass.
Okay. And are you also seeing problems, though, between the resorts, between Park City and from the McConkie's lift there to the Deer Valley side of Empire?
Probably, I would say not any more than normal. You know, we certainly have people that unlawfully go back and forth between the two ski areas. And that is not permitted on either side, either Park City or Deer Valley. And sometimes it's an uneducated person that just doesn't know that that's not allowed, and they get caught, you know, going back and forth across the border, as we call it, and they just had no idea that they couldn't do that. And some people know exactly what they're doing, and we catch those people as well.
Yeah. Now, even if they had passes to both resorts, it's still not legal, huh?
Correct. Even if you have a pass to both places, it is unlawful to cross that border and go between the two ski areas. It's two different landowners, two different resort operators, and we don't allow it.
All right. Now, have you been able then to rope the entire boundaries? That would be a lot of rope.
Yes, it is a lot of rope, and luckily we have lots of rope in our inventory. So we've been able to expand our roped boundary in that Empire area towards Highway 224, and also increase our signage there as well. And in moving down the road here in the future, we're going to do a little bit more work this summer to more permanently install that boundary and be able to put up that rope on some more permanent posts.
All
with
right.
Some more additional signage as well.
So, I mean, there should be no question. I mean, any legitimate skier knows not to duck under a rope. So this is what you're saying by putting those ropes up?
Yeah. It's, a skier should never rope anywhere or go past any clothesline anywhere. There's reasons we have them up. And that's for the safety of both, you know, our guests and our employees and the patrollers who are working out there. It's for everybody's safety that, everybody abide by that rule and those laws, and please stay out of the closed areas when they're closed.
All right. The resort has had a long policy of not allowing uphill travel of any kind with its resort boundaries. Again, this would be considered trespassing if people are found skinning up.
Correct. Yeah. Any backcountry, any ski area use outside of our normal operating hours in an open area would be considered a trespass. We don't allow, you know, skiing, skinning, sledding, hiking, cross country skiing, anything like that. What we are directing people to is that the guard road parking area there just above our Empire Lodge, and you can access all of that lovely backcountry terrain now that the city has been working on and has opened up more and more so this last couple of years. That's where we are urging people to go to and stay away from the ski area itself, because, you know, when we're doing our operations at the ski area, it's a dangerous place. We have snow cats grooming the mountain. We have snowmobiles skiing around in the mornings, early mornings. We're doing avalanche control work. And to have people in those areas when we're not expecting them can be a very significant safety issue.
Yeah. So can the ski patrollers issue citations, or how does that work?
We cannot. If it elevates to that level, we would need to involve law enforcement with any trespass charge and enforcing that trespass law. And, you know, we have a very good working relationship with local law enforcement, and they are more than willing to come up and assist us with whatever issues that we need their help with.
Okay, so you're not messing around? Citations will be issued?
Well, like I said, we don't issue citations. We talk to people, we give them warnings, we tell them, educate them on what our policies are and what Park City ordinances are. And then we would leave any citations up to law enforcement.
All right. So have you had any close calls?
Yeah, this last couple months, we've had, and one of the reasons why we had to expand our roped boundary, we have had people come in while we were doing early morning work and at the end of the day when we were doing our end-of-day mountain clearing procedures, our sweeps. And we've had to talk with several people over the last couple months about coming into our ski area boundary without, you know, they don't have a lift pass. They're coming in from the backcountry, and we've had those opportunities to educate those people on why it's such a significant safety concern on our end.
Okay. Chris, anything else you'd like people to know?
No, I don't think so. It's just lovely to finally have Mother Nature show up here in this last month or so, and hopefully she keeps on blessing us with what we're all here for, the beautiful white snow that we're about to go ski this morning.
Okay. Chris, hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie. Appreciate it.
That's Deer Valley Ski Patrol Manager Chris Urquhart. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, Summit County's representative bill banning transgender girls from playing on women's sport teams in schools making its way through the state legislature. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on House Bill 302.
The bill passed its first hurdle Thursday in a House Education Committee meeting with a vote of 8-6. Republican Representative Kara Berglund is sponsoring the bill. During the committee meeting, she said the purpose of her bill is to preserve a woman's space in sports earned through the civil rights movement.
Today we face the future where those hard-fought gains for equality are cast aside. A future where women are left as spectators in their own sports. Across America, there are stories of individuals who identified as male at birth competing against our female athletes. These individuals who identified as male at birth are breaking records that no female will be able to reach.
Michael Curtis is an attorney with the Legislative Research and General Counsel. Speaking during the meeting, he said he wanted to provide constitutional analysis on the bill without bias. He said he couldn't give a definite prediction, but it's possible, if not probable, that a court would find the bill unconstitutional.
So a plaintiff could argue that the bill treats transgender students differently than other similarly situated students, and there's been discussion about physical and biological differences and similarities, even transgender male students differently from transgender female students, without sufficiently significant basis for the disparate treatment based on sex. And that's the question, is whether there is a sufficiently significant basis for that treatment.
There were a number of female athletes who spoke out in favor of the bill. However, there were far more people who spoke out against the bill during public comment. Jennifer Plum is a pediatrician who spoke out during the meeting. She says youth suicides in Utah are driven by adolescents feeling like they don't belong.
We hear that there is not one transgender athlete playing right now in our state schools. I'll tell you what we have had. Between 2017 and 2019, we had 414 young Utahns kill themselves. We need to think about what we're doing here when we put bills in place that already take a vulnerable population and say they don't matter.
A similar bill was passed in the Idaho legislature last year, but was overturned by a federal ruling. Berglund's bill now heads to the House floor for discussion. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
This is Doug Wells of Albion Financial Group. Albion supports KPCW, and we applaud the station's commitment to local nonprofits. As a wealth manager, Albion believes in making investment decisions. One investment that always pays off is investing in the causes you care about through your favorite nonprofits. AlbionFinancial.com, helping clients make a lifetime of financial decisions.
Hi, this is Cheryl Sosnick, an enthusiastic participant in the Golden Art Club, a weekly virtual art class for senior citizens put on by the Kimball Arts Center. This class has offered me a shining light during a time of uncertainty, a chance to connect with friends, and to learn something new. Classes in the studios will resume in February. Stay up to date at KimballArtsCenter.org. Kimball Arts Center is a nonprofit organization proudly supporting KPCW.
Well, Park City's contract with the Sundance Institute runs through 2026. Sundance Managing Director Betsy Wallace tells us that although planning for future in-person festivals have some uncertainties thanks to COVID, they do plan to stay in Park City. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
Sundance's modified contract with the city in 2013 provided, among other things, that the event schedule would shift so it didn't conflict with Martin Luther King Day. It also provided that if Sundance wanted to change or give notice of termination, it must do so in 2021. Wallace said they haven't talked about doing that. She said their home is part city, although after this year's virtual event, it's likely that the festival will exist partially online in the future.
And then we heard people, congratulations, this was fantastic. We want to come back to Park City and we want to have the ability to go to a theater in person, and we also want the ability to stay at home and watch something in the coziness of our house. So we're really thinking about and pondering the concept of doing a hybrid this next year. And the concept would be back in Park City, back in Utah, where our normal footprint is, because this is our home and we always want the festival to be here.
The contract also provides that 70% of the festival events must take place in Park City or Snyderville. We asked how that requirement will be handled in the future.
You know, I think this next year is going to be a smaller footprint because I don't think we can come back in financially the way we did before. Most of the festival is paid up front to an extent, not all of it, clearly. So we're not in that, we're not financially able to do that this year. Plus, with COVID still being out there as somewhat of an iffy thing, we want to be mindful of not locking in too much this next festival, just in case it comes against us. So we're working very mindfully, but we've just started that process.
Sundance Institute CFO Betsy Wallace. For KPCW, I'm Rick Baroff.
We've got Carolyn Moore, I should say, on the phone with me now from Recycle Utah. Good morning to you, Carolyn.
Morning, Leslie. I just did that drive into town. It's not so bad.
Good. Okay.
Careful. I live in Jeremy, and I came into the Recycle Center. Maybe
okay.
45 minutes. So.
45?
Yeah, from Jeremy Ranch to in town.
Is that normal?
No. 20 minutes. 20 minutes would be a great day.
Okay.
It's about double. So
okay.
Add a little extra time to your commute. Take it easy. But the plows are doing a great job, and yeah, I think the worst part was just the traffic heading into Canyon. So if you're making the commute, plan on it to be bad around the canyons and then not so bad as you get closer into town. So.
Okay. Parking lots at Park City Mountain, base of Park City Mountain, are filled. So, yeah, you will have to park at the canyons anyway. Anyway, coming up on this report next month, you'll be reporting on your 2020 material totals. But just what's your sense today? I mean, was it busier because of the pandemic, or did things slow down since there were restrictions put in place?
It's very interesting. I mean, March, April were very quiet. That's when we were kind of doing the after-hours drop-off where people could come use the center when we weren't here. And so our numbers were down those months. But then with the influx of new people in town and the people in town spending more time at home, you know, ordering more online and, you know, consuming more glass and products at home, cooking at home, those numbers were up. So it'll be interesting to see how they balance out. We kind of have some initial looks at it, and we kind of just want to double check that we are where we are. Cardboard, I can tell you already, the second 6 months of the year, cardboard was up versus the first 6 months, which is not surprising at all with more time at home and then more people moving to town, a lot of moving boxes. So cardboard seems to be up. Glass might be about the same. And something like white paper, that was a big increase, and we're not quite sure why we saw an increase there as well. We're just not confident enough in our numbers to be going a year-over-year comparison, but we're doing initial looks at them to try to see what we know so far.
Okay, well, we'll tune in next month and find out more then. Also, save the date. We've got another green drinks happening.
Yeah, we kind of took the last 2 months off of green drinks. We were scheduled to have green drinks in November and then green drinks again in January. And with COVID, we decided to put those on hold and do something else instead. So we're going to bring it back in March. The date for that is March 9th. And usually the event is from 6 until 8. And we're going to go 5:30 till about 7 because the event will be outside. I've gotten a couple of other events some other groups in town have hosted that are outside, and they've gotten received well. You know, people here know how to dress for the weather. So it'll be outside. We're kind of working on two venues right now. It could think about it in maybe, you know, a park, under a pavilion in a park. If it gets a guest speaker talking about water, and people are welcome to bring their own warm beverage, just stay warm, or we might have some cider, you know, bring your own cup, we'll have some cider to share. So really just continuing on the education of green drinks, and doing outside with masks on and safe. And we will limit guest capacity, so if you're interested and you really want to save your spot, you can email Eric at outreach@recycleutah.org. Or you can always call the center here at 435-649-9698. So if you want to get March 9th reserved and on the calendar, make sure you can attend it. We're asking you just RSVP to this one just to be safe for the guest list and make sure we keep the capacity low.
Okay. You're also hiring for the zero waste communication specialist?
Yeah, this is a position we got through the Climate Fund back in 2019 as part of the Park City Community Foundation. And we had, it's a two-year cycle, and we had someone in the position for about a year, and she moved on to another full-time position within the community, so we're very happy for her, but we're looking for someone to pick up where she left off. So if you're personally interested in zero waste, or you want to kind of get involved in local government and getting people, you know, excited around an issue, it's a great position. It's about 5 to 15 hours a week. And you're part of the team here and kind of gets flexibility to morph the position how you want, and it's a really good community engagement position. So that's posted on our website if anybody's interested, or they can also email me for more information.
Okay, so what is it that this person would be doing?
A lot of, getting community support around zero waste. Park City Council is seriously considering a zero waste by 2030 goal as one of their key priorities. And this person would kind of be the one to bring the community to the council and saying, yes, this is what we want. We're interested in this. We want to see this, these kind of improvements here towards the zero waste goal.
Okay. Let's see. What's the latest on how the Arts and Culture District will be affecting Recycle Utah? We know that the council will be considering some demolition bids. Are you part of that demolition?
No, we're actually in the way of a road that would lead to some affordable housing on the Homestake lot. People know the Homestake lot is, if our lot dead ends, you run into the Homestake lot there, and they've used it for some, park and ride in the past, everything like that. And eventually, you would take the road right through our facility to get to low-income housing on the Homestake lot. And we all know that the affordable housing discussion in the Arts and Culture just is kind of in flux right now. So until that's decided upon further, we're not in the path of demolition. I think the initial demolition is for the former clinic, maybe the building that strip building that Anaya's was in, and maybe the former Kimmel Arts Center building. So I think those are initial phase one of the demolition. We do not sit in the phase one, so we continue to be here doing what we do.
Okay. And what's the latest then in terms of where you go and when you do that?
Yeah, we're kind of in a waiting period, between what's happening here in the Arts and Culture District area and then what's happening at Gordo, which we're hoping to be our new site. And Gordo will be a soil repository in addition to some space for us, hopefully. So we're kind of working with the city on what's happening here and what's available there and the timeline there. So we're kind of just, being patient and prepared on our end, awaiting council's decision on what they want to do.
Yeah. So do you have a wish list, though, in terms of what a new center would look like?
Yeah, we've been working with our board, and we have some architects hired on what we could do in the new center if we wanted to start to take things in a new way. I can tell you, hands down, that the center will have an entrance and an exit, not a dead end like we have now. That's been a problem with our center for a long time. So that's an easy fix that we want to do. We've considered accepting new materials, maybe textiles, maybe food waste. We've definitely explored what else is out there that we can take. What are other centers like us doing? How can we be more effective and serve the community better, as well as serve the recycling markets better? How can we work better with where our stuff goes and it leaves us here?
Yeah. So realistically, though, what would be some kind of shutdown period? Even during the pandemic, you guys kept open,
Yeah, realistically, we would have our new center built completely and then make the move to the new center as seamlessly as we can. We'd hope to not have to do a temporary option. We discussed going temporary, putting bins outside while the new center is being built behind them and getting by that way. But, ideal state would be the new center is completely up and running. We seamlessly make the transition from one to the other. We will be buying some new equipment for the new center, so that'd be, using the new equipment at the new center and able to function the new center as much as we can, full capacity right when we open.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, thanks for your time, and we'll be on the pledge drive on March 2nd if anybody wants to tune in then. Thanks to KPCW for all they do, and good luck on the pledge drive.
Okay, Carolyn, thanks. Carolyn Moore is the Executive Director of Recycle Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Test Utah is offering quick antigen testing this week in several locations throughout the Wasatch Back. Drive-through testing will take place at Park City High School today, 12 to 7 p.m. Antigen testing also being offered at South Summit School District in Camas. The district office located at 285 East, 400 South in Camas. That's being offered Friday, February 19th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. inside the district offices. And then Saturday, February 20th from noon to 7 in the parking lot there. Drive-through antigen tests also available at the Wasatch County Events Complex at 415 Southfield Road in Heber City. Testing there will be offered tomorrow, Wednesday, February 17th, again from noon to 7 p.m. Registration for antigen testing is required in advance. You can find the links on our website, kpcw.org. The Wasatch County School District provides preschool opportunities for up to 430 3- and 4-year-olds. They have seen a drop in enrollment since the COVID pandemic. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has this update as part of our ongoing coverage of early childhood education.
Two programs are running in each of the 5 elementary schools in Wasatch County. Wasatch County School District Early Childhood Instructional Coach and Preschool Coordinator Tara Boswell said the neighborhood preschool transition to kindergarten makes it easier on children and families. COVID school closures last year prevented them from using the preschool and kindergarten assessments, which would have provided specific feedback on the effectiveness of the program.
Well, we use the state PEEP assessment, which is the preschool entry exit profile, and that aligns to the kindergarten entry exit profile. And so we're really excited to see the results of the exit PEEP assessment as they enter the kindergarten KEEP assessment to see the power of preschool, because we know what they're learning, and there's that little window in the summer that sometimes we see that little bit of a summer slide. Last year was our first year using that assessment, and then we didn't get to do the exit PEEP because of the school closures.
She said the kindergarten teachers see a big difference in children who have attended preschool.
They see a huge difference with students that have been in the preschool setting because they know how to work cooperatively. They understand kind of the school game, I guess you could call it, just how to work in a classroom, and they also, they have those foundational academic school skills that support them.
Boswell said English language learners have the support of the 5-to-1 student-teacher ratio. When they go to kindergarten, the dual immersion program covers the challenges for kids learning English. Boswell said the certified teaching staff is on the same salary scale as the public school teachers. Paraeducators are a 27-hour-a-week position, which do not share in public school benefits like health care. However, Boswell said the school district would help paraeducators pay for the cost of further early childhood certifications.
You know, I have found personally that our paraeducators, we have a handful that start on to their degree path. And they start out in the preschool as paraeducators, and they just get hooked into the love of teaching. And so we support them in getting their CDAs, which is a child development certificate, and then that often will go on and get more schooling.
They have room for more than 400 preschoolers, but with COVID, they've made adjustments to class sizes. With parents choosing different early childhood education and care, Boswell said she anticipates enrollment to increase once COVID-19 concerns have settled and more people get vaccinated.
So within our school-based sites, we have 255, and then we have an additional 13 that are in that Early Start program. This was a hard year, as you know. We reduced class sizes to 15 instead of 20. And we've also just don't have as many families enrolling this year.
Wasatch County School District preschool tuition is $175 per month, with financial aid available for families that qualify. To qualify for a tuition waiver, they consider income and risk factors, including English language learners, addiction problems in families, and extreme changes in home living conditions. Open registration for the Wasatch County School District preschool program runs through this month. For more information, contact your neighborhood elementary schools or the district office at 435-654-0280. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
This is KPCW Park City.